smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
Listen every fourth Friday on KBOO Portland from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. to Pacific Underground, where Asians and Pacific Islanders take the mic into our own hands.
The other thing, too, is when I go to a dim sum, I don't really talk that much.
It's business.
It's business, and it really freaks out some of my friends here in the U.S.
Each month, we cover a new theme that unpacks API identities.
Have you ever been told your English is so good?
Well, for me, yeah, it happens all the time.
That's Pacific Underground every fourth Friday from 11 a.m. to noon on KBOO Portland.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Joining me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, today, I want to talk about the moral right of the young. I want to talk about the planned impoverishment of the population and how that serves to divide us on class and race lines and lines of gender. We'll talk about how both political parties intend to support maldistribution of wealth. We'll talk about the aggression of the billionaire class and the conditioned passivity of the worker-servant class here in the United States. The first thing I want to point out is that we are in the worker-servant class. If you're listening to KBOO, there's a good chance, I would say 99% of the people listening to me right now, are in the worker servant class. I work, you work, we receive a paycheck, and depend on that to not be evicted or foreclosed. And if that's the case for you, you are working class. If you could not do without that income for a few years, you're working class. You must produce a steady stream of money to live in this society. And when you get too sick or too sad, or if you suffer from your mental health, or if you get too injured to produce that money, you get to join the millions living on right-of-ways and sidewalks and in cars parked out of the way. You get to find a deal with a friend who will let you in that spare bedroom or on the couch. Understand that despite any car you might have paid outright, or any set of nice clothing you might own, or your skills as a clerk or musician or anthropologist or writer or what have you, you are a serf, and you live at the mercy of giant corporations and their administrators and their clerks and their security guards. The most dangerous thing you can tell yourself is that you are middle class. Don't tell yourself that you're middle class. Middle class is an outmoded term. Middle class used to refer to, well, you know, doctors who had been in practice for a while, for example, who had paid for their own homes and could afford to take several years off and take a trip across the world. That's middle class. You're not. Everyone else is a peon. Everyone else is subject to that widespread, and horrific punishment, homelessness. And in the United States, we divide that according to gender and race. In all likelihood, I'm talking about you. Do you have enough cash to spring for a lawyer if you're stopped for no reason by an aggressive cop? It's happened to me. I was stopped for no reason by an aggressive cop. And what if that cop takes you in, beats you up, charges you with resisting arrest? Cops do that, you know. If they beat you up, they're going to charge you. They are going to charge you with resisting arrest. Now, there's a few people who really want to believe that's not true. And all of you are white. You could be charged with possession of a dangerous drug if the cop doesn't like you. It doesn't matter if the drugs were originally in the front pocket of the cop. If you don't have several thousand dollars up front cash to defeat the charge, there isn't any difference. You're going to do the time. Maybe the drugs were aspirin pills. It doesn't matter because they're pure heroin pills until you have those thousands up front for the lawyer and the time to be off work and everything that it takes to defeat a charge which is not likely. That's how the system works. Guilty until proven affluent. Many of you are nodding your heads. Those that aren't likely have white privilege. White privilege means not getting treated like that most of the time. We'll put a caveat on that. Doesn't always work, but generally it does. Now let me take Walmart for an example. From Wikipedia, largely, Walmart is the world's largest company by revenue, according to the Global 500 list in 2016, as well as the largest private employer in the world with 2.3 million employees. As of January 31st of this year, Walmart has 11,000 and change stores and clubs in 28 countries under a total of 63 banners. The company operates under the name Walmart in the United States. It's Walmart in Mexico, it's Central America in Mexico, it's Asda in the United States, the Seiyu Group in Japan, Best Price in India. It has wholly owned operations in Argentina, Brazil, and Canada. It owns and operates the Sam's Club retail warehouses. It's a family-owned business. As the company is controlled by the Walton family, Sam Walton's heirs own over 50% of Walmart through their holding company, Walton Enterprises, and through their individual holdings. Walmart is also one of the world's most valuable companies by market value and is also the largest grocery retailer in the U.S. In 2016, 62% of Walmart's $478 billion in sales came from U.S. operations. So I have two questions. How did Walmart get so big? What are they, geniuses? Do they work so hard? Where does the money go? Walmart has a technique. Here's their genius. They crush the competition in each town they target. I'm using the word genius sarcastically here. We're actually just talking about a habit of aggression. So for years in the Portland metro area, for example, Walmart introduced 17 stores within a year or so, pretty much all at once. There wasn't enough retail room for that many stores, but that didn't matter to Walmart. As a fact, it was part of the plan. They intended to dilute the market, and they did. The 17 stores, using the vast multi-billion-dollar reserves of the company, began hiring desperate Portlanders to work as fast as they could. For the legal minimum, each employee cut off below the number of weeks that would require the legal imposition of health insurance and other basic needs, most of the employees. These employees were not given set schedules, but were called in and run out according to the manager's perception of how much they were needed at the moment, maximum efficiency. The pay for these employees is so low that they must depend on their own food stamps and, of course, those of friends and relatives to survive, hence setting up a free tax and social subsidy for Walmart's labor and therefore profit from the local tax base. This is part of their scheme. You have to understand how Walmart does it. You support them with your taxes. That's how you have Walmarts. These new 17 stores in Portland, when they first put them in, brought in shoppers with deals, deals, deals. For people trapped in the low-wage economy, it was no longer rational to go to their old retail outlets for everything from tires to groceries, sundries, pharmaceuticals. Everyone began to go to Walmart instead because the price is so low and because your wages are so low. And what choice do you have? You could take an attitude and go someplace else and then explain to everybody else why you don't have as much groceries. So Walmart works this way. And then as part of the plan, Walmart began to close the stores eventually. It took a couple years. And now they're beginning to close the stores in the outer rings of their intended market. So if you want those deals, now you have to come in a little bit closer. But you can't go to the stores that were there before because they have been crushed by the low, low prices, below market prices that were not only sucked out of your friends and neighbors' efforts, working there at a furious pace for as little as possible, supported by the tax funds. But also, it was below profit because they can afford to go below profit. They have the billions. When the retail landscape is destroyed, except for Walmart, the special deals and low prices will disappear. How do I know? This is what they always do. When the only place you can freaking go is Walmart, it'll turn out, oh, inflation. And you won't be getting those amazing, amazing deals anymore. Everyone will have to go to Walmart for goods because there will be no choice. They have done this hundreds, if not thousands of times. They have destroyed whole communities in this way. The resulting profit sucked out of the lives of desperate workers and broken communities is given to a special dynasty of heirs. And I use that word without exaggeration. I'm talking about people who have the wealth of kings, a dynasty. The money is given to a dynasty of heirs, people who were born into the Walton family. None of these people have had to learn a living ever. There's nothing about meritocracy about this. They were born with this money. They will never have to work, nor will their sons and daughters, and nor will the kids of their sons and daughters or their kids. They receive and will receive billions of dollars each from your desperation. They are the owning class. They are Jim Walton with $32 billion, S. Robson Walton with $32 billion, Alice Walton with $32 billion, Lucas Walton with $10 billion, Ann Walton Kroenke with $5 billion, almost $6 billion, Christy Walton with $5.2 billion, Nancy Walton Laurie with $4.2 billion. Remember that $1 billion is 1,000 times a million, 1,000 times a sum you will never see in cash. This is so much money that any one of the dynasty could pay the city of Portland budget for this year in full and have millions and billions to spare. And Jim Walton alone, or Robson for that matter, could pay the city budget 9 times over. You will never see these people at the airport. They don't fly first class. They fly on their own specially appointed giant jets where they lounge on overstuffed couches during the day. They have marble showers installed with gold fittings. And when they're tired of that, they go to their luxuriously appointed bedrooms, all the while whisking through the air at several hundred miles an hour. They don't have to worry about traffic at the airport once they land because they have their own airports. Those little private aviation airports that you thought were for Cessna enthusiasts have a special little house. And that special little house has a special fancy fireplace and guards and expensive woods and more marble. And you would be arrested if you so much as showed up to see. This is what maldistribution of wealth has brought us. Now compare that with the tent city that I pass every time I go to KBOO. And I know there are some good people. There are some good people enduring the bad people, frankly, that they don't have walls against, trying to live on those sidewalks, picking up their tent, watching when the cops are coming, getting ready to skedaddle for another chance to live out in the rain on the cold sidewalk without heat. Oh, yeah. And they work. They work full time. That's the failure of capitalism. That's the American nightmare dream. So today, the Trump administration is decrying the death tax. They're referring to the dynasty tax that has been so ineffective in stopping the predation of the Walton family, as I described it. They want to cut corporate taxes, which nominally are at 35%, but due to uncountable loopholes are actually often 0%. If you want to have a little fun with a search engine, look up corporations that do not pay taxes. There's plenty of them, and they're huge. It's just another dog and pony show intended to give you the impression that if you just work hard enough, and if you are smart enough, the meritocracy will reward you with affluence. And anyone who can break through the propaganda and actually look can see that this is a lie. That the richest people in this country, like the Waltons and the Kochs and the Trumps, gained their piles of lucre by squeezing the life out of whole populations. So I call for limits on wealth, and I call for your comments on this because as a propaganda breaking exercise, I really want to try this out on you. You know, because whenever I talk about Walmart and what they actually do, I've tried this like on buses. Pass by a Walmart, start talking about how they're tax supported because they pay so little, as I just said, that it is necessary and they would not be able to operate if it were not for food stamps. I talk about how they exploit their workers by not giving them full time, they don't give them full time so they won't have to pay them benefits under the law, by not even letting them know when their next shift is necessarily, by having everyone on call, by kicking people out if there's not enough people in the store to justify it, by just long and short of it, not doing anything but sucking as much wealth out of the efforts of their workers as they can. The way I phrase it that way is we're propagandized and we're brainwashed to think that they give the workers money. It's like the workers, what, they would just go there for no reason, and then they give the workers a certain amount of money and the workers earn that money. And conversely, you hear that the CEOs earn billions per year. You don't earn billions. It's physically impossible. And the people who do earn money are not paid what they earn. They are paid a wage based on desperation and, yes, based on those food stamps. It's all calculated. And I want to know what you think about this sort of thing. I call for limits on wealth. It's obscene to provide less than $40,000 per year to live on in 2017 U.S. society, and it is obscene to allow anyone to appropriate, notice I did not say earn, to appropriate billions of dollars from the wealth created by all the workers of that society. Wealth should be limited to a few million per individual at most. Plenty to live in luxury, but not enough to rule like jewel-encrusted dictators. And that's the reason you never get your policy suggestions. That's the reason why your request for jobs, for a peaceful society, for an end to the wars, all goes on deaf ears. Because the government isn't here for you. It's for the billionaires who can pay for the ads to bamboozle you to get back in office. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Limits on wealth. Wealth should be limited to a few million at most. We need a universal income, and there is plenty of money in the society to pay for it. Once again, that number, 503-231-8187. And I want to turn to an article in Common Dreams about the latest Trump boondoggle parasite enhancement for the rich. It's called Goldman Sachs Populism, and it's from commondreams.org. President Donald Trump unveiled his latest giveaway to corporations and the ultra-wealthy on Wednesday with a tax plan that would, according to one analyst, personally help Trump enormously. The Trump's package would also involve a pass-through tax cut on business income that is currently taxed at the business owner's individual income tax rates rather than the corporate rate. Such a tax cut is also a centerpiece of House Speaker Paul Ryan's Better Way plan, and as the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities notes, would overwhelmingly benefit high-income people and create a costly loophole. Trump himself is said to have 500 pass-through arrangements. Eileen Applebaum, a senior economist with the Center for Economic and Policy Research, further explained during the campaign, President Trump proposed reducing the top tax rate on pass-through income to 15%, a tax break that would benefit him tremendously. Speaker Paul Ryan's proposed tax plan would reduce the top rate to 25%. Both have claimed this reduction would benefit small business owners and grow the economy. However, these proposed cuts in the pass-through tax rate benefit only a small number of wealthy households. The majority of business owners and partners are already taxed at rates lower than Ryan's or Trump's proposed top rates. And speaking for myself, of course, there are so many loopholes that corporations go year by year without paying any taxes at all, and in fact are subsidized, are given free money by the U.S. government. Certainly that is true in the case of ExxonMobil. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And I believe we might have someone trying to call in at the moment. Samantha.
Hi. How you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
I want to say thank you so much for having this conversation.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah. So I totally agree. We need to end the New Deal, and everything it's done to just siphon the wealth from the people. I personally think an elastic clause on income the top earners shouldn't make more than 26%, which is what they were making, or 26 times that of the lowest paid worker, which is what they were making before the New Deal, instead of the 400 plus times they're currently up to across the board. I mean, I also don't think that that's going to happen, because a lot of those people are backing government. My other thought, which is something I have a lot, is that people need to abstain. We're in a very abusive relationship, and when you work with the people in abusive relationships, when they fight back with these sociopathic abusers, they tend to get hurt really bad. Then when they threaten to leave, they get hit with love bombing. The victim then forgives because of the, you know, few little gifts or whatever they do to make amends. They then justify, oh, see, they can change, they're really a good person. And then they go right back into an abusive situation. The only way to get out of an abusive relationship is to leave it.
Yes.
We just need to all stand up and say, no.
Well, and there are increasing efforts to do this. This May 1st is going to be a day without immigrants. And there are also other groups who are calling for general strike this May 1st, just coming right up. And that's a case of calling in sick and saying, you know, doctor, it's my eyes. I can't see going to work. And going out to the streets and doing whatever you find is reasonable. It will take a lot of efforts. It will take a lot of agitation, a lot of different efforts. Some people are resisting their taxes. But I think the first thing before anything can happen is that people need to understand just how badly they're being abused and just how important general prosperity is to reducing the suffering that we experience in this society. And we are all suffering when we see our people, our friends, our neighbors, our family living on the streets, living on a couch, and whole swathes of the population realizing that they have nothing. They look out into the horizon of employment, as it were, or other opportunities, small business too, and they say, there's nothing out there that will keep me anything but occasionally out of the streets. There's nothing out there in which I will, in a sense, get ahead and have a peaceful, calm and permanent place for myself and my family. That's what people need. That's why we have the phrase in Mexico, tierra y libertad. The two are together. You don't have liberty until you have the land that is yours, until you have a place and you are guaranteed at least that minimum peace that you will have a share of the land and the peace. You know, you don't have liberty.
No.
So I'm calling for an end to rents and mortgages too, and that won't happen right away either. But it'll never, never happen until we consider it possible and we understand that it is rational and moral.
The second big step to getting an abused person out of an abusive relationship is connecting that person with a support group. Us living as island people, my house, my car, my job, my family,
right,
this nuclear unit will do us no good. We're just more vulnerable. If you think about monoculture in any way, you're making a resiliency and robustness. You're taking the resiliency and robustness out of the population. You're making them dependent. You are weak in a small, tiny group. 200, 300 people in bands, multiple bands of that. That's where it's at.
We certainly saw that in the Katrina disaster, where the people who were able to survive and get by and eventually rebuild were the people who organized, who understood that whether they were organized before or just organizing at first for long last, it's the people who stuck together, got through that. It's the people who stuck together and shot back at the Nazis that got out of the Warsaw Ghetto and everyone else was taken in. Hey, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you so much for having this conversation. This dialogue is super important.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I'm talking about how important prosperity is and how close we're getting to an even worse collapse. We are in a collapse. I'm not going to stand here and say, oh, there's a possible collapse. I mean, we got our own people living on the streets, under bridges, out on 205 at Foster. The city put out giant rocks, I think they're basalt rocks, big sharp rocks to keep people from camping under the bridge. But there are so many people who need to camp, who need to get out of the rain, that people have gotten together and good on them, and they have shoved some of those rocks aside, and the tents are popping back up. We are conditioned, we're propagandized to believe that we are living in a temporary situation, and if we could just have something, you know, some trickle-down genius theory that would restart the economy, that those tents are going to go away and everybody's going to have a house, well, that's a lie. We are now in an economy that is intended to crush us, and we have the moral responsibility to destroy that society and to build a better one, and that we can do. We can have a better world. Number to call at 503-231-8187, and I'll check with the engineer. No calls coming in right at the moment. Oh, I do. John is on the air.
Hi, Teresa, thank you very much for a great show. Am I coming through?
Yes.
Oh, great. And, wonderful summary at the beginning of what Walmart's all about. Great job.
Thank you.
And I'm a longtime sustaining member of good old KBU, and anybody listen, I sure hope that they join KBU and whatever you can give, because you guys are so important. And my thing is, I will not shop at Walmart, period. And also, get your opinion, Teresa. It seems to me, if you're looking for a store that has a lot of stuff, that probably the best, I live downtown, it is probably Fred Meyer, and I've talked to Fred Meyer employees, and they at least have some benefits. Is that your impression?
Well, it's certainly better than Walmart. Costco has a better deal when it comes to employees. There's another one, I think, I could be wrong, Winco, I think, has a better deal for employees. I mean, just about anyone but Walmart. Safeway is awful.
Yeah, I agree.
But there's better opportunities right now. But Walmart is squeezing them out. Very seriously, their business plan works. Those 17 stores I talked about that came in here, that they brought in so many to crush these stores that I'm talking about. And so we need awareness of what they're doing and how they're doing it so that we can, well, I guess in the short term, pass laws that prevent Walmart from living off, you know, our food tax stamps, pass laws that prevent Walmart from underselling and destroying local businesses, or more local business, just about any business is more local than the multinational Walmart. We've got to be aware. We've got to confront them directly and not just, I mean, because... Yeah, I don't like to darken the door of Walmart either, but they're forcing the issue. This is how they've become so rich and how they sucked so many billions of dollars out of the bloodstreams of Americans and into this dynasty, the Walton dynasty.
Well, great job. And also, I want to encourage people to vote May 16th. You get your ballot in the mail. If you haven't registered, be sure and register. And Oregon, it's a wonderful place to vote because we get the ballot in the mail, and then you have approximately 30 days to, you can check out all the free weeklies like Willamette Week, the Mercury, Portland Tribune, all the local papers that are free. They have voting recommendations. And so we need to resist, and especially at the voting booth. Thank you very much, Teresa.
Thanks for your call. This is April 27th, a Thursday. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9:27 in the morning. Coming up this morning at 10 o'clock, Chris Andre will be here hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints will be on with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Between the Covers, a conversation with Jan Martel, author of the novel Life of Pi. And we'll be discussing his latest work, The High Mountains of Portugal. At 11:30, The Film Show talks to the filmmakers behind three new Northwest documentaries, The Reluctant Radical, Oregon's Animation Magic, and America's First Foodie, The Incredible Life of James Beard. And KBOO is one of those organizations that I was talking about that we need to center our communities around. KBOO Community Radio is supported in the greatest part by your contributions, individual contributions, which means that if the Trump administration, for example, should decide to yank out our small and recent CPB grant, we will survive. This has happened before. they called it, it they did it to community radio stations around the nation, and a lot of people were fatalistically calling it the death warrant. It wasn't for KBOO because we have always stuck to our funding model, which has kept us honest, and that's you need to consider right now pulling up KBOO.fm and making a contribution. We'd love to share a t-shirt, or you will find other things there on the website. It's easy. It takes, I don't know, just a few seconds. And it's part of your, I would say, your obligation to the community to keep this station running. If you like it, if you use it, you should support it. It's only fair, KBOO.fm, to do that. Now, I was talking about prosperity, lack of, in this country, and how we're all brainwashed into passivity to go along with this stuff. And was also talking about its effect on people of color. It's a lid that keeps the system of oppression and repression of people of color in place. And that also goes for women, for differently gendered people such as myself. So long as we are in a situation in which prosperity is a pipe dream, there is always this pressure not to change anything. Ironically, everything needs to change, but the tendency, the human tendency, is to say, don't change any little thing because this little bit over here, that's mine. I got that. That's only human. I'm not sneering at you or anyone else for that. I'm saying we need to change that. And to start to change that, we need to understand what's being done to us and act collectively. Very hard to do, but it can be done, has been done. You know, the prosperity that that has come and gone in the United States was due to policy decisions. People think that it just magically occurred after World War II. This is not true. There are several streams that brought together the prosperity of the 60s, 50s and 60s. One of them was the rise of the Soviet Union, which frightened policymakers in the United States. There were strong communist organizations in the United States. You can say what you will about them, but they talked a good game. They didn't want to believe, by and large, this is another human thing, really didn't want to believe that Stalin was the monster that he was. But in terms of the rational distribution of wealth, they were down with it, explained it well, and they worked better with non-white groups than other organizations, and they were a threat politically. That's one stream. Here's another stream. In 1932, people in Flint, Michigan, were about to they needed higher wages because there it used to be that auto workers were paid like fast food workers and considered much the same. And it was destroying their families, as those wages always do, as Walmart wages do. And people occupied a factory and said, we're not leaving. We're going to have a sit-down strike at this factory, and you're not going to have any cars. You're not going to have any more cars out of here until you deal with us as a union. Well, General Motors didn't want to do that. And General Motors confronted them with the cops, and they boarded up the factory, and they said, we're not leaving. And they started organizing food caravans to come in. So the local cops tried to block those, but they found other ways to get the food and the water in and occupy the factory day after day after day. So the National Guard was called in, and there was shooting, and people in, I want to emphasize this, people in the factory shot back, people died. There was a war over the right to unionize and to earn enough to live on from the work that you do instead of simply being a serf, a peon, whose efforts are sucked out every day, every week, every year, every lifetime to be given to very rich people. That was being understood. That was in the context of the rise of the Soviet Union. It frightened the elites. World War II happened. After World War II, the United States, which did not commit the millions and millions of deaths that the Soviet Union did to defeating the Nazis, was in a better place. And policy that you can read in the speeches and the deliberations of Dwight David Eisenhower, for example, state that wealth is going to be consciously distributed as wages, and a society is going to be created that is less violent, less broken, less disrupted. And it worked. It worked. And when I was a kid, my dad was an accountant, which he got through the GI Bill, which is a redistribution of wealth to soldiers. and which was not distributed to people of color, by the way. That, there's another story, a rather common and vicious story of what it is to be white in America. But I was white in America, and my white dad got GI Bill. In the early 70s, he was earning $25,000 a year, which makes you want to say, well, so what? Well, get an inflation calculator, and you're going to be shocked. But I'll do the work for you. It's $160,000 a year. And it felt like it when I remember what it was like. My dad had two new cars. He had a new house. He helped his relatives. Very important. That's part of prosperity. You spread it around. You help your relatives. I got new pajamas every season. I got new cool school stuff every season. It was never a problem. It's, you know, imagine you had $160,000. There's a very few of you who are professionals of the type who are currently getting paid, maybe a few medical professionals, maybe some administrators. You're getting $162,000. You live out in the special burbs, special areas, or you might live in the Pearl. Or maybe you're a tech geek and you're getting $162,000, $200,000. Well, accountants used to get that. It was very widespread. So I drove around the suburb and I would see other new cars. And there was all this wealth. And I'm not going to say that was a perfect society. It was quite an oppressive society, and that wealth was denied to people of color. But this is the emphasis I want to make now, not to the degree that we do it now. Everything's worse, much, much, much worse from policy decisions. This is 37 years post-Reagan. It was policy decisions that sucked out your ability to look onto the landscape, to look onto the horizon of what you could possibly be, what your life could be like, what you could have, what your folks could have, what might be possible for you or your kids' education. That has been taken away by policy decisions, right-wing policy decisions. The Democrats are in bed with this austerity measure, neoliberalism. The Republicans are in bed and actively giving sex to the idea of impoverishing the population and keeping it that way. It took a long time to break us down to this level of misery, and now we're used to it, and we think that's the way the world is. Well, it isn't. It isn't. The money, if you do the math, not only is the money there for a basic minimum income of $45,000 for every adult, but it would make the society richer. It does. It's a proven thing. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Now, the money's not there if you insist on giving it away to ExxonMobil and to Pentagon contractors so that we can sort of enforce our idea of white supremacist meritocracy on anyone who doesn't have an advanced anti-aircraft system. That's what it breaks down to. If you don't have the latest Soviet anti-aircraft, well, your family is just going to be sludge whenever the Pentagon feels like it. Time is 9:36. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Dan is on the air.
Teresa, good morning.
Good morning.
You are nailing it as per usual. I'm calling with a very closely related question that I literally don't know the answer to, and you demonstrate more perspicacity in a half hour a week. Than
perspicacity,
a
dollar word, I love it.
I try to use it on a quotidian basis. but here's something I'm confused about. When I first heard a sketchy detail, and I'd like your opinion and perhaps a caller or two, when I first heard of the cancellation of one of the outshoots of the Rose Parade on 82nd Avenue due to some left folks' objections to people who were marching, I just assumed, though they were neo-Nazis or the KKK or just some far, far right-wing kooks. Now, I am no fan of Republicans by any means. But when I learned that it was simply the Multnomah County Republican Party that had folks say we're going to drag them out of the parade and disrupt this parade, and the Portland police said, well, we can't do anything about that, and the parade was canceled, and parades are cool, especially on a place like 82nd Avenue that doesn't get much. So my question is, have things reached such a level that, as evil as they may be, that Republicans are not allowed to march in a parade in Portland? Is that really the solution we're looking for?
I wouldn't phrase it that way because it's more complex than that. But I would say that this this goes to the breakdown of order that is inevitable under Trump, under his demagoguery. The activist section of the Republican Party that intended to march there, intended to allow in their company and therefore legitimize and therefore empower white supremacist groups. And that meant an act of intimidation towards all of the people that they intimidate. It's like I've said many times about Nazis and the Klan. Free speech of Nazis and the Klan? No, we don't allow free speech to ISIS. Anything ISIS, anyone who puts on ISIS garb and carries an ISIS sign has to say is not free speech here in the United States, because we know that they are a death squad, that violence will come of it. They have violence. It's proven violence. Each gesture in that context, it's the context that does it, is an act of violence. The Republican Party cannot include the alt-Reich in its ranks and then say that they are not committing an act of intimidation and violence.
Well, okay, I hear what you're saying. Let me ask you a question, because you're giving me new info. I unfortunately, perhaps, was relying on a piece in the Oregonian, make of that what you will. You're saying that outright white supremacists were going to be part of marching under the Multnomah County Republican banner.
Absolutely, because they've been so active in the Republican Party locally, and it's
so you're based that on some knowledge.
Well, yeah, I mean let me repeat what the chairman of the Multnomah Republican, I just got my tongue tied up in a
knot. Multnomah County Republican Party.
Thank you. Multnomah County Republican Party said in a statement that his group wants the parade to continue. He said, quote, "The bottom line is that Portland needs to choose between supporting terrorist thugs and protecting average citizens who want to participate in their community. The Multnomah County Republican Party is not composed of Nazis and white supremacists, and those who think that we would tolerate marching in a parade with folks carrying swastikas are delusional," end quote. Now, he said that, but I almost guarantee that someone there will have a swastika out, and we know from their composition and from their previous rallies that the swastikas and the hoods come out, and the Dixie flag. And so he can say that they
well,
would tolerate it. But
you're making a leap there, Teresa, and I hope...
The leap is from past behavior.
Yeah,
the leap is from the march in Lake Oswego with the swastikas and the Dixie flags. And sorry, they shouldn't have made common cause. They shouldn't allow Donald Trump making common cause with Nazis and Klansters. And now they have, and now they're in with the terrorists, and so they painted themselves with that brush, and people need to defend themselves against them, and I support that.
Does the shutdown of free speech, saying some idiot like Ann Coulter can't speak, is that the route we want to go, just shutting down all kinds of views?
No, I think that's taking it a little too far. Ann Coulter can get on her platforms and say what she wants. Fine with me. I don't, as a trans woman, I don't fear Ann Coulter.
Well, you have to have some sense to inspire fear. All right, you've given me something to think about. I'll leave you with this thought. I don't know that swastikas would appear marching with the Multnomah County Republicans. I hope that that is not the case. If that is the case, we've gone further down into the hellhole than even I'm aware of. So,
well, all the violence has been on one side so far. It's possible some violence will come back the other way as self-defense. Yeah, it's a gross situation. But
I wish you well, Teresa, and I look forward to contributing in the name of your show in the upcoming fund drive.
Thanks for your comments, and thanks for having a rational discussion about this.
Very good. Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's we're talking about the 82nd parade, not the main Rose Parade downtown. But yeah, it's a shame. And so the Republican Party has taken the policy of saying, oh, it doesn't happen, which, as I've said time and time again on my show, is an essential part of maintaining white supremacy. It doesn't happen. It isn't there. We're not doing it. That's not your blood. You're not in that grave. Lying about it, pretending it's not there, making excuses, an essential part of white supremacy. Oh, some of my best friends are people of color. that's how it's done. And so I don't accept the Republican Party's statement. What they could have said that might have been more convincing to me would be, we recognize that due to the demagoguery, the cheap demagoguery of Donald Trump, white supremacists of various stripes have been empowered and intend to show up. And so we, the Republican Party, are going to show up to the, we would like the parade to go on, and we are going to show up with signs that say, down with white supremacy. Easy enough. What have they got to lose? Wouldn't hurt them. I wouldn't even think of shoving someone off a parade route, even if I were still young and strong and could do that sort of thing. Another consideration. If they were wearing a t-shirt or holding a sign that said, down with white supremacy, needs to be said, certainly by the Republican Party, that would alienate part of their base, which would effectively cleanse them. Yeah, so no problem there. Free speech out the wazoo. But you're going to have solidarity with Nazis and Klan to the point of pretending that they haven't consistently showed up at your rallies, lying and saying that you won't have them there, pretending that it's free speech instead of an act of intimidation. No, I will defend myself. Others will defend themselves. This is over, Republican Party. Waiting for you to stop lying is over. Let me tell you something else that happened recently, and it was utterly disgusting. And I have come into it third hand. Let me see if I can find my notes on this. It was at the Artist Repertory Theater. I'll read some of the words of a black man who was invited to talk about the black experience of the Artist Repertory Theater in the past week, approximately, and a thing happened there in White Portland. And the event was about Rodney King. It was an opportunity for white people to learn about the black experience. It happened at Artist Repertory Theater. And this person, who I'll call CW, and a lot of you know, just because I wasn't, you know, I was trying to look on Facebook and couldn't figure out if it was a public post or not. So I'll use initials. He wrote the letter of apology to Artist Repertory Theater. The letter of apology you published today was severely lacking in courage and lacked a serious commitment to racial justice for oppressed people. I recognize that the talkback prevented people of all races to feel like they were heard. There were many shortcomings in the facilitation style that influenced the result. While the public apology recognized that people left the event feeling disrespected and harmed, there was no acknowledgement of the fact that the greatest amount of harm was experienced by the African people in your audience. This harm was caused by the actions of white audience members who patronized your theater. The harm was so significant that one of your invited panelists walked off the stage as the audience fought to assume control of the dialogue and prioritize white voices. To add insult to injury, the public apology was shared to Artist Repertory Theater Facebook page along with a picture of the panelists together smiling. This gives the viewer the misleading perception that the panelists left the event happy and that they have been felt by ART. After the talk back, he writes, I gave ART staffer detailed input on what explicitly should be included in a public apology that could have made the panelists feel supported. I'm disappointed to see that the input was not taken seriously. And what follows is, he said he decided to fix your apology. I decided to fix your apology for you, and there follows some text that would be an appropriate apology, including, "We will do everything in our power to prevent black people from being subject to this kind of trauma in our theater again." There were actually several Facebook posts on this, and this is how I found out about it. Another writer who I will refer to as ABW wrote, "There was a moment this weekend." This is a person of color, where I found myself in a deliberately constructed fishbowl with five other Africans surrounded by white liberals and theater folk who took the opportunity to yell scornful comments at us in response to our insufficient deference to whiteness. We'd laugh at the absurdity of the situation. They'd yell at us to stop laughing. We'd exchange shocked and knowing, can you believe this, S glances. They'd accuse us of being dismissive. At one point, a white man from the audience commanded the facilitator of the panel. It was supposed to be a panel featuring the four of us. It turned out to be a panel featuring the racist white audience with occasional interludes from us. Commanded the facilitator of the panel to put down her mic in order to make other white men feel more comfortable speaking, and she did. Early on in the panel, an African man called out liberal Portland's pattern of consumption of African pain, self-flagellation, and aggression for the useless self-serving cycle it actually is, and questioned when the Africans would be discussing our issues in our own spaces. In response, a white man in the audience who described himself as a darker Russian Jew who had, quote, killed a lot of people for this country, end quote, began to accuse the African man of creating an us versus them dynamic. The African man quite reasonably responded that he had said nothing about us versus them. He was very clearly discussing us, African people, and not them. The white and the writer wrote on Facebook, the white and willing foot soldier of colonialism, capital, and imperialism began to puff himself up to shout down the African man again. A quote, I'm not trying to be patronizing, end quote. But I had the mic, she writes, so I shouted him down instead. I told a white man in a theater full of white people that what he had to say didn't matter, and when he began to raise his voice to try to drown me out, I got louder and said again that he needed to stop, and that the only voices that mattered in this space that had been built from bricks of African pain were African voices. He stopped and visibly sulked for the rest of the evening. The other white folks didn't like that, though, and dozens of them gathered their pearls, purses, and sports fleece and left. I sat tall and visibly defiant, but inside I felt tired and small, mostly effing tired. At that moment, a white woman in the front row yelled at me and said, if what we say doesn't matter, then why are we here? And I said, to consume African pain. The African man and his partner that raised the most important question of the evening walked out. One of my co-panelists walked off the stage. The audience agitated unsuccessfully for white power, and I got to spend a night and a day struggling through my own internalized colonization. That was my Saturday night, FU Portland, for real FU. So that's how ugly it got, and that's how ugly it is under Trump. And when I talk about a broad subject like restoring the attitude to allow us to have the prosperity that we desperately need, the prosperity that we need for peace, for political power, you can't have political power if you don't have some basic prosperity. If you don't have tierra, you don't have libertad. If you don't have land, you don't have liberty. If you have huge marginalized sections of the population, you cannot have peace. This gets back to just how much racism has infected and drives the society. Racism is essential to depriving the greater number of Americans from the sort of peaceful prosperity that we could have. And so if we want change, if white people want change, we can't budge. We are locked down by white supremacy, which has to be confronted, has to be called what it is, has to be seen and not denied. So again, when it comes back to stopping the 82nd Avenue parade with the inclusion of the Republican Party, yeah, because the Republican Party is now the demagogue's party more than it ever was. It was always infected with that. Now it is branded with the Confederate loser flag, and it will be out there. And so it's shut down. They don't want to see that scene of people whipping out their Dixie flags and getting shoved to the side, although I think it might be a good scene in the long term. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Talking about prosperity. Been talking about race relations in the racist and profitable United States. 503-231-8187. Kathleen's on the air.
Well, hello. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show. This great conversation, you've got a lot of good things that you're touching on. In fact, it's all true. It is all happening. But the one thing I think that we all need to understand is that we need to identify the true perpetrators that are behind all of this. And if they can get us to fight ourselves, create division, create parties, then we can just do what the human can do. We're very easily manipulated, controlled. So the human then wields and chooses to act in a certain way based on, you know, the programs and the brainwashing that's going on. So really, Democrats and Republicans, they're the same. There is no one party against the other. We have to stop thinking about this. We have to think about not having an enemy, except we do. And it's the Khazarians, it's the Zionists, and anybody that speaks out against these so-called, self-proclaimed Jews, which run our government, run the world. They're pitting, can you imagine?
That's what you call a hard hang-up. Okay, let me tell you about who your enemies are and the dynamic that I've identified. First, I'll start with, I've mentioned these before, seven people and not one of them are a Jew. Jim Walton, $32 billion. S. Robson Walton, $32 billion. Alice Walton, $32 billion. Lucas Walton, $10 billion. Ann Walton, Kroenke, $5.9 billion. Christy Walton, $5 billion. Nancy Walton Laurie, $4 billion. Now let's talk about Charles and David Koch, who are Jewish. Oh my gosh. And because they're Jewish, they're billionaires. No, that's not true at all. Because they are very aggressive people who are trained in a mind-breaking, bizarre way. An intense, child-abusing way by their father, who is also super rich. They are monomaniacs, and their only sense of self-respect comes from the billions. This is also true of Trump, and Trump is a very sad case. Like the Koch brothers, Trump was raised not by his mama, who he desperately wanted to see and hold and hug and kiss like babies do, but when little Trumpy was little bitty, he didn't get to see his mama. He was raised by nannies, as rich people's kids often are, a series of them. And no matter how he raged, and no matter what class he passed, no matter what tactic he came up with, which was acting rather badly, he would never get that complete embracing acceptance that one gets from one's mother. That's what I think his problem is. That and the fact that he was told instead that his value is in the wealth that his family and that he pretends to accumulate. And that's accumulate in the sense of a tick accumulates blood from your leg if you don't pull it off. Those are the enemies. And if you want to talk about the militarism that hold sway largely due to the free billions and billions of money and arms and acceptance that comes from the Americans in the Jewish Knesset. If you want to talk about the Israeli Knesset and how wrong and racist and violent the policies and imperialist the policies of the Likud party are. In other words, if you want to talk in an informed, caring, compassionate, and effective way about what is wrong with modern Judaism, oh, you can talk with me for quite a while. I agree with people in the Knesset, absolutely. The Communist Party, I happen to agree with. Just about their entire platform, I think the Communist Party in the Knesset has got it down, but they're shouted down by the Kudniks because, man, they like money, and who doesn't? And who gives them money? Well, our country does. I won't say you and me because I've been making the point that you and I don't have control of policy in the country, partly because we have accepted our eternal role as serfs. I've talked about democracy and how it needs to break out. I've decided this week to talk about something very basic about why democracy cannot break out. It's because of policy decisions. We support the policy decisions because we're brainwashed. It's humiliating to consider just how ruled you are, just how ruled I am, how our self-conception about how we think of the society, about how we treat each other, has been defined, created, and imposed on us by other minds, psychopathic, sociopathic minds, whose intent was to, in the case of Charles and David Koch and Trump, whose intent was to make up for a terrible gap in their own psyche, for a hole in their own heart that they just couldn't fix. People who are deeply, deeply sick, who are megalomaniacs and monomaniacs for cash, for money, and who will never get enough. There isn't any end game. There's no point at which the Walton heirs or Trump or the Koch brothers or people like Tillerson will say, oh, I've got enough money. They can't do that. There's something very wrong with them. And it's painful to them, and this pain will drive them forward. And I have compassion for them, but I have more compassion for the millions of people and the planet whose lives they are destroying. And so we need to gather together. This is why KBO Radio is so important, to get together, to see this, to see our poverty, to see how oppressed we all are, to see how we've turned on each other against women, against queers, against people of color. And how profitable that is for people who do not, who absolutely do not earn billions of dollars, people who suck in billions of dollars. I'm asking you, please see it. Just take a deep breath and see it, because when you do, you're going to start to act differently in many ways. You're going to take some things seriously and other things maybe not so seriously. I've gotten on the air and I've talked about the Debt Resistor's Guide. Look that up with a search engine. If you're like most people, you've got some debt going on, you need to know how to do it. Debt Resistor's Guide, among other things, will show you legal ways to log roll the parasite class to keep them off your back and off your family's back and get more cash in your hand. I'm not kidding. That's real money for you. This is a very corrupt society, and so it deserves and needs this sort of guerrilla tactic that I'm discussing. The Debt Resistor's Guide. It's online. You can find it with a search. You've been listening to Press Watch. It's getting towards the top of the hour. Chris Andre is coming in next, and we're broadcasting to you via 90.7 FM on our big red and white Eiffel Tower on the Hill, and via KBOO.FM to all the ships at sea.
Hello, Weirdo. This is Rich, host of Radio Lost and Found. Be sure to check out the show on its new time slot. That's every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight. Radio Lost and Found is a two-hour media escape of found records, tapes, found sound, internet insanity, and more. That's Radio Lost and Found every second and fourth Thursday from 10 to midnight, right here on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sexual Assault Resource Center's 40th Anniversary Fundraiser on Thursday, April 27th at 5 p.m. at Echo Trust in Portland. The Sexual Assault Resource Center was founded in 1977 to promote social justice by eliminating sexual violence in our community through education, support, and advocacy.